This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Rebuilding trust in local government has become a priority in the wake of former Charlotte Mayor Patrick Cannon's arrest on federal corruption charges and his subsequent resignation. Cannon's alleged crimes raised questions about how both the city and the county do business and about what businesses have to do to have their projects green-lighted. Yesterday, we spoke with Mecklenburg County's relatively new manager, Dina DiOrio, about that and much more. And today, we spend the hour talking with Charlotte's new mayor and relatively new city manager. About a month ago, former State Senator Dan Klotfelter was appointed mayor of Charlotte to fill out the remainder of Cannon's time in office, which amounts to almost a full term, minus a few months. He becomes the city's fourth mayor in just a year. Anthony Fox left to become U.S. Secretary of Transportation. Patsy Kinsey was appointed to fill out his term. Then Cannon was elected, and now Mr. Klotfelter is in the top spot. This will be our first opportunity to talk to Dan Klotfelter, and we're very pleased he is with us for the hour. Welcome to the program.
Good to be with you this morning.
And welcome back to Charlotte.
Thank you.
And here, also here is Charlotte City Manager Ron Carley, who came here from Arlington County, Virginia, just about 13 months ago. Welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Good to be back with you.
Thank you. You were a member of the City Council, Mr. Mayor, prior many years ago, and then off you went to Raleigh to become a state senator for, what, 14 years?
15 years. Just at 15.
And you gave up your seat in the Senate to become mayor for the next couple of years. Why did this job appeal to you enough to give up all that power in Raleigh?
I'm still asking that question myself. But it just seemed like the time called for it. I was shocked, as everyone in the community was, by what I read in the paper that morning, and I thought, this is not my town. Mm-hmm. This can't be my town. It's not going to be this way. And I thought about it some, and thought I've been down in Raleigh long enough to memorize all the billboards on I-85. So there's really really no interest in that anymore. And maybe ought to come home and end up the way I started out.
But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that you toyed with the idea of running for mayor.
I did.
When
a year ago.
Patrick Cannon was elected, why did you decide not to run?
Well, at that time, Mike, we were in the throes of discussing the comprehensive tax reform at the state level, and Senator Fletcher Hartzell and I had put together a soup to nuts tax rewrite, and we thought there were some good prospects for it in the session. I didn't want to leave without playing out the hand over the course of the session on that. And we had some good success. Parts of that were enacted into law. Other parts of it are still pending, and I wanted to see that through.
Okay. In your letter of resignation, which I guess you have to send to the governor,
right?
You said that it was a hard and sad letter to write. What made it so?
Well, relationships are really important, and after 15 years in a place, you sort of become part of the family, and the members of the colleagues that I worked with and the staff of the General Assembly really had become a family. It was sort of like leaving home to come back home. That's always hard.
But there's also this thing where, correct me if I'm wrong, but one assumes that you go to Raleigh and you become a state senator, particularly after 15 years, you build some clout in the Senate, you have some power in the Senate, even though you were a Democrat and the Senate had changed hands and gone Republican. There are still people there, even on the other side of the aisle, who I think know you and respect you and respect your positions on things, even if they don't agree with you. And to walk away from that and come into a situation where the mayor here, it's a weak mayor system, where the mayor really doesn't have a lot of power. It's kind of a bully pulpit more than anything. Why? Why would you want that?
Well, the mayor is only weak in formal power. I think the job is as strong as you want to make it. Mm-hmm. It really is can be anything you want it to be. I did think that some of the things that had happened in Raleigh over the last year were unfortunate, and I thought perhaps that by coming home I could change the nature of the dialogue between the city and the state, or at least contribute to that.
Are you referring to the airport controversy?
Well, that's one of the things, certainly. Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. After being selected for this job, you said that your top priority was going to be stability and the restoration of trust in government. How badly damaged do you think this situation has caused? The Cannon situation has what kind of an effect has it had?
Well, I want to say it's a tragedy for him and for his family, but
yes.
I think for the city, It's something that's going to be a footnote in our history. In 30 days of being back after 25 years so off the city council, I've been very comforted to see the organization just as strong, just as professionally run and operated as it ever has been. So I don't think there's any fundamental
damage.
He was
only in office as mayor for, what, three and a half months?
Four months.
He been a Patrick McCrory in office for 14 years, this would have been a far worse situation, correct?
Well, I think it would have been just as shocking and just as surprising, right, regardless of how quickly it happened or how long the occupant of the office had been there. This is just not things that happen in Charlotte. Right. They don't happen this way.
Have you talked to Patrick Cannon?
I have not, no.
Okay. When you talk about stability, what are you talking about? Are you talking about the unusual turnover we've had in the mayor's office in the last year or something else?
Most certainly that. I called the manager at home after the council voted, and I said to him, I said, you know, the old saying is the third time is the charm. I said, well, will you take a fourth? And he said yes, the fourth, but no more than that. I said, well, good, I'll finish out the term then. So, I think stability right now is important, just so if people get their minds back and their heads back around the really important work of the city.
You know, you said a second ago that the job of mayor is what you make of it.
Right.
What would you like to make of it?
Well, I think given the peculiar way I got into the job, it's obviously not I can't presume to come in with a mandate and pronounce that I'm going to take an initiative based upon some electoral mandate. I can't do that. So I really think that my first job is to help the council come back together and get through the trauma of the event that happened. And it happened to them. He was their mayor, and they were working with him every day very closely. And so the first job, I think, is to help the council come together and get its focus back on its own priorities.
I mean, I know you're an appointed mayor, and you weren't elected by the voters at large, but you have been through many elections and, right, and were sent to office by voters. And in this case, it seems to me, you were selected after much consideration and as a result of what you've described as a tragedy to take over this role of mayor for the next 2 years. That, I think, comes with some – there's a mark of distinction there, it seems to me. It could have been anybody, but it was you.
I think about that every day. It keeps you humble to think about that. Why me? Why now? It felt right for me, and obviously did for the city council. I do think I need to do a lot of listening, though, as a result of the circumstances. I need to hear people out. I need to hear how it feels to them, what's happened, what their take on it is, and what they need in order to respond to this and move on.
We invited you on this program right after you were appointed to this job, and you declined because you said you didn't feel up to speed. Have you had time? Well, I can see that, but I thought it was a very wise decision on your part. Have you had time to get up to speed, and what did that require?
Mike, it's sort of like the dog that caught the car, and except for me, the car didn't stop when I caught it. It's still racing down the road, and I still feel like I'm running flat out 24 hours a day. A lot of things are familiar. A lot of things are coming back to me. A lot of things are unchanged, again, about this, the nature of the city organization and the values that drive the organization. Those are really as solid as they ever have been, and so that's not changed. A lot of the current topics of the day are new, and I'm still reading on those.
You are an attorney by profession,
right,
and you've been a politician for a great long time now.
I've held office.
Well, is there a difference?
I like to think so.
What is it about holding public office? Because an attorney thrives on billable hours, and every hour that you're not working as an attorney, it seems to me, you're losing money, lots of it. So what is it about holding office?
I'll take issue with your description of an attorney. I think attorneys thrive on taking a knotty situation and trying to unravel the knot, taking a difficult problem and trying to help people find a solution, and those are the preeminent requirements of holding public office, is taking diverse opinions and trying to find unity in that diversity, trying to find some commonality that can knit people together and help them realize their common goal. Attorneys are doing a lot of that. Very same thing. Among contending parties in a negotiation, contending parties in a dispute, it's a very similar skill set.
How do you feel about the condition of the city and the people who run it and the people on council and not just in the aftermath of the Cannon resignation and arrest, but also just how things are going? How do you feel about it?
I actually feel very good about it. This group of council members is as committed, as diligent a group as I ever served with, and I served with, I think, some really fine people who serve the community when I was on council, and this group is their equal in every respect. I'm very excited to come into the meetings with them and to help them get through their meetings because they really care, Mike. They really care, and they've got the right sort of direction for the city, I think.
Did you throw your hat into the ring when this happened, or did they come after you?
Some of both, a little of both. I think I have to sort of say I threw my hat in the ring because I had thought about it a year ago, mm-hmm. And had declined at that point to do it. If I hadn't been willing to do it this time, I think I would have not even thought about it.
For most people, this Patrick Cannon arrest and resignation came as a complete and total surprise. For some, not so much, because there were, I think, some rumblings about impropriety that had been going on, unprovable rumbles of impropriety that had been going on for a while. Ron Carley, the city manager, is with us this morning. How surprised were you that morning when the arrest came down?
Well, I was definitely surprised. I was actually in a meeting with department directors, and one of assistant managers had gone back up to the 15th floor to check on something, came down and said, "I think you need to go upstairs. The FBI is serving a search warrant on the mayor's office." And so,
what goes through your mind when somebody tells you that? You're the city manager. What are you thinking?
Well, when you're a city manager and you have a crisis situation, you actually go into operational mode and you focus on, all right, what is the issue and how do we deal with it? And so the immediate response was, you know, what is going on here? And how do we make this work as successfully as possible? How do we actually cope with the immediate situation? So once I got up there, got the city attorney there, met with the lead FBI person, head of the investigation and serving the search warrant, understood who they were, what they were doing, mm-hmm. Then pulled the staff together and organized to support them in their efforts to fulfill their mission.
And when they come in with a search, they had a pretty broad subpoena to search whatever,
right.
And that continues to go on. I mean, how does the city conduct business while making available everything the FBI wants without getting in the FBI's way, but also allowing you to continue to do business?
Well, we certainly have not gotten into the FBI's way. I talked with the U.S. prosecutor, U.S. attorney, two or three times that day. Talked with the lead person of the FBI. If there is corruption anywhere in the city government, we want it identified and we want it dealt with. And so I pulled all the staff together on the 15th floor, and we had a conversation about how do we facilitate this, how do we do the work that we need to do, but how do we cooperate fully with this investigation. And we have consistently done that throughout the process. At the same time, we do have a city to run. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is put together a smaller team that is working specifically to deal with the needs of the FBI and the prosecutors. And so they're focused on that task. Meanwhile, the rest of us are running the city on a day-to-day basis.
Had you heard any of the rumors about impropriety prior to Mr. Cannon's arrest?
Actually, I had, and I confronted him with it early on after he got elected mayor, because I think the ethics of government, the honesty, integrity of government is the foundation on which everything else is built. If you don't have that, if people don't trust your government, you can't do any of the other things. It just doesn't matter. And he relayed to me the incident with the with Cammie Harris' family that had been reported in the Charlotte Observer, mm-hmm. and he told me that was the only issue and explained it.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of this. We'll talk about the budget and many other things as well with Ron Carley, the city manager, and our new mayor, Dan Clodfelter. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and McGay Shepherd, certified financial planner and senior vice president of investments at Stifel Nicolaus with 25 years experience. Stifel is a national brokerage firm providing investment services since 1890. Stifel.com. And Mr. Rogers Windows, a local family business since 1986, offering renewal by Anderson replacement windows and entry door systems installed by trained craftsmen. Product details at MrRogersWindows.com. Anna Joyner has spent most of her life as an environmentalist who grew up in the roaming the hills of western North Carolina. She also grew up as the daughter and the founder of a megachurch whose beliefs do not include climate change. And that clash came to the attention of Showtime, the TV network, did a whole hour on them, and they join us tomorrow to talk about how they got through their difficulties over climate change. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Republicans have legislative majorities in 26 states and are working to build on that success. The battle for control of local governments and implications for environmental, economic, and social policy.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to the mayor of Charlotte, Dan Clodfelter, who just took office recently, and Ron Carley, the city manager, who has been here for about a year now, a little over a year now, I suppose. I want to go back to this situation where you confronted former Mayor Cannon about rumors of impropriety. Is that unusual for a city manager to walk up to a new mayor and say, are you doing anything underhanded? And did you expect anything other than a no, of course not, answer?
Well, ethics are at the core of the city manager profession. We have a professional code of ethics that we've adopted, which you will see on my wall as you walk into my office. It is the most important part of the profession. And so, no, I would expect any city manager, if he or she heard of improprieties among any of their elected officials, would confront them on it and actually ask the question.
And when you did ask the question, did he I know he gave you an answer, but did it appear to be a truthful answer?
Well, that remains to be seen. In a lot of the allegations, obviously real concern, but they are only allegations at this point. He's entitled to his day in court.
Right.
And so we'll see how that plays out in the end.
The U.S. Attorney's Office asked for and received a very broad subpoena, which allowed them to ask for any document at all relating to Mr. Cannon from 2010 to March 26, the day he was arrested. I can't even fathom how you come up with all those documents. I mean, what kind of a drag is that? Where do you go to look for them? Is it on paper? Is it on computers? If it's on computers, I mean, how do you get to it? How do you know every single document that he touched?
Well, most of it is on computer now, and so we immediately put together an IT team that locked down all of the files. We've now preserved all of those separately, had them available to the FBI. The actual paper documents are fairly narrowly contained within the office, and so those are relatively easy to produce. It's a lot of electronic files, though, and that just the volume is the greatest challenge. But again, we have a segregated team that's working on that issue and trying to be responsive. Actually, the bigger challenge we have right now is for the open records request. The prosecutors have asked us not to release records before they have an opportunity to go through them. They want to build their case. And so far, the media, I have to say, has been very tolerant and cooperative, and we really appreciate that. But we're anxious to be able to push out those open records requests as well. We want to meet those obligations.
To be clear, because I don't think a lot of people in the public understand this, the media has come in and asked for their own set of documents so that they can do their own research into Patrick Cannon, and the Justice Department has asked you not to release those documents until they've had a chance to review them.
That's right, and some of those media requests are as broad as the FBI subpoena.
Wow. Our guest yesterday on this program was Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiIorio, who said that they're under a similar situation where their records for the county have also been asked for by the Justice Department because in the course of the affidavit that they wrote out, Patrick Cannon is alleged to have said he had influence over the county manager and others on the county staff. So they've all been interviewed. How many city staff members have been interviewed?
I don't actually know specifically the number. Again, the directive that I've given is for everybody to be cooperative. And beyond that, with regard to the specifics, we've been asked not to discuss the case publicly, and I'm trying to abide by that commitment.
Okay. You have said that, and you adamantly asserted, that Charlotte is not a pay-to-play city. How can you be certain of that comment, given that you didn't know about Patrick Cannon's alleged activities?
Well, let's understand what his alleged activity is. I mean, you have to read the affidavit, and it's alleged that he offered to help people, but it's not been proven yet, and it's not indicated in the affidavit whether or not he could actually deliver on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so can any person ever sit and say there's absolutely no corruption or wrongdoing in any organization? No, absolutely not. And that's why we're cooperating fully with this investigation. But as a culture, it's certainly not a pay-to-play culture within the city. I've seen no indication of it whatsoever. Plus, the procedures by which we go through, whether it's rezoning or permitting or contracting or rezoning, are multi-agency operations. There are many, many sets of eyes and checks and balances. And so there's literally not one person someone could go to actually buy influence to make something happen. It's a system that's designed for integrity and certainly a system that's designed for resilience.
And yet last night at the city council meeting where this topic came up, someone, I'm not sure who, suggested that there be a whistleblower hotline initiated, which I think is a good idea. Who asked for that?
Well, I initiated that over a year ago.
Okay.
So when I came to Charlotte, I began looking at the systems and structures around integrity, as I said earlier. Professionally, as a city manager, it is what is most important to this profession. And talked with the internal auditor because I identified we did not have a hotline service. That's very common in large organizations. It actually tends to be more effective as a prevention tool than an exposure tool.
Okay.
Just having the hotline serves as a discouragement from people doing bad things. And so we began working on that literally about a year ago, looking at how we would do it, what the parameters would be. And it was really late in the calendar year that the auditor came to me with a proposal, which we were going to wait until the new fiscal year and put it in the budget. But in light of what's happened, we decided to go ahead and reallocate resources and implement it now.
During your time in the Senate, Dan Clodfelter, there was the resignation of Jim Black as Speaker of the House over the fact that he took money in a bathroom for services rendered, not in the bathroom, but for political
campaign contributions.
Exactly. This is the kind of thing that that people always like to say, well, they're all crooked, you know. They're all up there for their own personal gain. I know that you're going to say that they're not, but in your experience, which has spanned nearly two decades, are most of the people in government, local and state, honest?
Of course they are. I think the reason that things like the speaker situation and the former mayor situation make the news is because it is so uncommon. If it were as routine as the sun rising every day, you guys in the media wouldn't even be talking about it. But it's only because it's an aberration that it is newsworthy. And I think that's true at the state level and at the local level.
And this came up last night, and I think Michael Barnes, who's the mayor pro tem, brought this up, that it's very difficult. You have to be very careful if you're going to put rules in place that control what an elected official can do or his interaction with either business people or ordinary rank-and-file voters, because part of your job, it seems to me, is to talk to these people about what they need, what they want, and make judgments on whether or not you can support what they need or want and exert the influence that is required one way or the other.
That's absolutely correct. And you have to be very careful not to set up gotchas, as it were, just traps to catch innocent folks who are in normal situations that just trying to sort of figure out how to do the job.
Could that be the case here with Patrick Cannon?
No, I don't really know what the case is there, so I can't comment. But it is something that we were very sensitive to when we rewrote the state ethics laws in 2006 of trying to avoid creating situations where we had an artificial violation by someone who was perfectly innocent. It's a difficult thing. You can't write a set of rules to make people ethical. That's not going to do it. All the rules really do is remind people, keep it front of mind, as it were, and makes them stop and think about the situations that they're in.
In the U.S. Attorney's affidavit to get the court order for the subpoena and for the rest of Patrick Cannon, they allege that he promised to these undercover FBI agents posing as developers that he is alleged to have promised that to grease the wheels, essentially, of government to get their projects a green light. Would it be unusual or even unethical or illegal for an elected official to speak to a city or county department head to say, hey, I think this is a good project. Can you see what you can do to make this easier for them to get approved? Would that be illegal, unethical, et cetera?
It's neither illegal nor unethical. The gist of the accusations that the U.S. attorney has lodged is that that was done not out of a conviction that a project was a good project for the city or good for the public, but it was done in exchange for a payment of cash. That's the illegality that's alleged.
Okay.
But it's not at all unusual for members of a governing body to advocate for positions on behalf of constituents. Not at all.
So given that, what he just said being the case, how do you maintain ethics if I'm the employee that somebody comes to, an elected official comes to and says, see what you can do for this guy because it's a good guy and it's a good project. I don't know whether there's cash that has changed hands for that request to come through. What should my response be to that? The elected official's my boss.
The response should be the same to everybody, whether it's elected official or to the applicant just coming directly.
That's right.
We have standards and procedures by which we make judgments in terms of rezonings or permits or contracting, and the same standards should be followed wherever the request or the inquiry comes from. And everything that was alleged within that affidavit is available directly to anyone who wants to do business with the city directly from staff at any time. We're open for business. We want people to be successful. We want people to file for rezonings. We want people to build things. We want people to contract with the city. And we're going to make those judgments on the administrative side, both at the city, county, and the city level and the county level, based on our objective standards that we apply to everybody the same.
So, if everybody knows that, if the politicians know that, if the elected officials know that, and the business people know that, there's nothing to be gained by going to a pen and saying, "Could you help me with this?" Or anything for Patrick Cannon to gain by going to the head of a department and can make it happen. Because you're saying that you're going to use the same – you should be using the same set of standards whether or not you're asked a public official to do that.
If it is an administrative question or decision, that's absolutely true. Now, there are obviously policy decisions that the elected officials make that go before the full mayor and council, and interaction and consultation between the elected officials and people who have applied for the reasons or the site plans and from people in the neighborhood or for it and against it is a part of that democratic process leading to ultimately a public hearing and a review by the Planning Commission and a public vote. Again, there are many eyes available even on those decisions that affect developers that are policy decisions made by the elected officials.
Before you arrived, during the boom years, there was an impression. And I talked about this yesterday with Dina DiOrio, the county manager. There was an impression that developers in Charlotte always got their way. If they wanted to put a project on the corner, it was going to happen because the city wanted to grow and they wanted to be big time and et cetera. And then we have the situation with the money that it takes to get elected to office, and you combine that, money's important. How is city business done? Does money talk?
Well, yes and no. I mean, those who want to do projects have to be able to finance the projects. They must have the financial wherewithal to deliver the projects. And so to that extent, money is important to getting development done. It's important to getting the projects built. It's important to founding a business and running the business. But it doesn't drive the public decisions about permits, approvals, rezonings, licenses, or any of that. Money is not talking about those kinds of things. That's not really where the money is.
I mean, you're certain of that they're not key individuals who have a lot of clout in the city because they're wealthy business people who get things done because they're wealthy business people.
Well, in any city, there are people with clout, and in this city, some of those people have money, but there are also people with clout in this city who don't have great means, And we see that constantly. There are development proposals that are rejected, notwithstanding the financial backing of the projects. There are neighbors who can defeat rezonings, and it's done. It's not that the money gets its way all the time. That doesn't happen.
That really is a critical part of the democratic process. I mean, sometimes people think that their voice doesn't matter. That is contrary to my experience. I have seen people show up at public hearings who had never been there before to actually change the course of major projects, regardless of the money interest behind them. And I think there is a sincere effort on the part of all of the elected officials I've worked for over 30 years to really listen to all sides and ultimately do what's right for their community. And Charlotte's had a very strong emphasis on growing the economy and creating jobs.
Mm-hmm. Mike, 40 years ago in this town, people without money on the west side, people without money on the east side, got together and by their numbers changed the governance of this city. They took it out of the hands of wealthy businessmen and created a district representation on the city council. So it's just not correct to say that this is a town that only responds to money.
And yet, 40 years later, we still hear complaints from people on the west side and on the east side about being neglected as people in southeast Charlotte and those downtown people exert all the influence on city council and county commission.
The tension is always there. It's always going to be there. Parts of the community are up and other parts of the community are down. And then 10 years later, the roles will be reversed and the stresses will appear elsewhere in your community. That's a function of a growing community. It's a function of a very diverse community that we have. I don't think that that's a sign that there are entrenched powers in this town that will not allow change except on their terms. I don't believe that that's the case.
There has been discussion among business people that there's too much red tape to get things done in the city and also in the county. And I know, Ron Carley, that you've been working with the county manager to streamline the local permitting and code enforcement process. Why did you feel that was necessary?
Well, we do want it to be easy for people to do business in the city. We do want to grow jobs. I think that's a shared value of the city and the county. But we also want to do it appropriately. And so the idea is to look at our processes and try to make doing business in Charlotte as easy as it is anywhere else. At the same time, one of the things that the council raised last night was that in doing so, we need to make sure that we don't lose those checks and balances, that we still have lots of eyes looking at the projects, and in creating a more streamlined process, we don't create opportunities for people to have undue influence or for proposals to get through that should not.
Hmm. Where are you on that streamlining of the red tape?
The city and the county both have separately hired the same consultant to work with our internal processes on each side so that we each get our own houses in order, and then we're looking to bring those processes together. And that will take a number of months to do. This is looking to the long term, not just for quick fixes.
Is it a good thing that you're working with the same consultant? I mean, now the left hand will obviously know what the right hand is doing. Is that why you did it?
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, well, we did it with great intentionality. We actually piggybacked on the same RFP so that we could have the advice of someone who had looked on each side and would see how things would converge in a way that would ultimately provide for both the city and the county the greatest efficiencies as possible.
Ron Carley is the city manager of Charlotte. Dan Klotfelter is the new mayor of Charlotte. When we come back, I want to talk about our relationship with the state of North Carolina, which is rocky at times, and also about the budget that was presented last night at City Council. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm of Pointer Spruill, celebrating 25 years of serving business clients in Charlotte with offices in Raleigh, Rocky Mount, Southern Pines, and Wilmington. Information available at pointerspruill.com. And the professional MBA program at USC's Darla Moore School of Business, convenient location in Uptown Charlotte. Details at moore.sc.edu/PMBA. Republicans have legislative majorities in 26 states and are working to build on that success. And on the Diane Rehm Show on this election day, in 20 minutes, they'll talk about the battle for control of state governments and implications for environmental, economic, and social policy. That's all upcoming on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation with Dan Clodfelter and City Manager Ron Carley, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is the place to start, and we're coming right back.
You'll lose your house to foreclosure, so things are bad. Can they get worse? Oh, yes, they can.
We are depository institutions. We're insured by the FDIC. We're lending our depositors money, and we have to be able to have a reasonable expectation that we're going to be repaid.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. They are going to track you down. We'll tell you about it next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're with Dan Clodfelter, the new mayor of the city of Charlotte, appointed to fill out Patrick Cannon's term for almost the entire term. Ron Carley is also the city manager of Charlotte. He's with us as well. Many Charlottians hoped that the rise of former Charlotte Mayor Pat McCrory to the governor's office and Tom Tillis as Speaker of the House in the legislature would help Mecklenburg's fortunes in Raleigh. And we've sometimes had a rocky relationship, the great state of Mecklenburg with the legislature. You were in the Senate when Senator Bob Russo and others recommended the transfer of the Charlotte Airport to a commission appointed, kind of an authority appointed, I guess, by a joint operation of the state. I'm perplexed about why that issue ever raised its head. Do you understand why it raised its head?
Yes and no, I think is the accurate answer to your question. There are still many things that mystify me. One of the things that is most unfortunate about the way that issue developed was the fact that it was taken to Raleigh in the first place. One of the strengths of this community work has been we try to work things out here at home. And when we go to Raleigh, we go united. We go together. And that is the recipe for success in the dealings with the state government. And historically, that had proved very, very successful for the city. Unfortunately, this dispute got out of town, as it were, and was taken into the legislature, and positions hardened as a result of having it all aired out publicly.
Now, if I'm wrong, please correct me, but I think, didn't Senator Bob Russo take this to Raleigh?
Well,
I'm
not sure he would have done it on his own initiative.
Okay.
I don't think he would have waited for the airport, thinking about ways to change the governance of the airport. I don't think that was on his agenda. He's been very focused on tax and finance issues, and this was, again, there were some local disagreements about the operation of the airport, and he took those issues and built the legislation around it.
And you said that because it went to Raleigh, positions hardened and things got out of we're not sure where that stands now. It's been in limbo for about a year.
Well, it's in court now.
Will your relationship with those in the legislature perhaps play a role in cooling this off and perhaps letting people back off from their positions?
I hope it can. I don't really know, but all I can do is just sort of try to talk to my colleagues about it and remind them that this really is a local issue and should be dealt with here in Charlotte.
But the legislature in the last couple of years seems to have wanted to reach into local communities and take control of things that had historically been locally controlled. What's that all about?
It has done that, and I think that's a very, very unfortunate trend in the legislature. I would say that regardless of which party was in control, I think when we had the majority and would do it, I thought it was a bad thing when it was done then. I'm not sure exactly.
Democrats did it? In what way did they do it?
Occasionally. It was done probably less frequently than it has been in the last couple of years. It's just not a healthy thing to do.
Why do they do it? Particularly Republicans who want local control from the federal government. They want to take that control away and give it to the local.
Mike, that's a different show with different guests. You're going to have to ask that question of a different group of guests. I can't answer for why they think that's a good idea, but I think it's a very bad idea. This is a very large state. There is plenty for the legislature to do with putting together the state budget and setting policy directives for the state as a whole, and running the micromanaging the affairs of individual local governments is just not something they should be doing.
So this airport decision is in the hands of the court system at the moment?
That's correct.
What are we waiting on the court to decide?
Well, the court has a number of issues in the case, but one of the big issues is whether or not the legislation could be given effect without the approval of the Federal Aviation Administration. This airport is very heavily regulated and financed by the FAA, and the judge in the case believes that he needs to get guidance from the FAA on what should happen.
Does Anthony Fox have control over the FAA?
He is recused from that and is not participating in anything affecting the Charlotte Airport. That's consistent with the ethics rules at the federal government.
Okay.
And to my knowledge, and as far as I've been able to determine, he has respected that and stayed completely out of the issue.
So if they don't decide in the city's favor, if the court does not decide, is it still possible for the legislature to back off and say, never mind? You can keep it.
I think it's possible. People can change their minds about anything, and I've seen it done in the legislature. I've done it myself in the legislature many, many times. There were some concerns. I think they were based on misinformation. I think they were based on incorrect information. There were some concerns about whether or not the airport was being used to subsidize other city operations properly or improperly.
Was it?
No. It absolutely was not, and indeed, it really couldn't be. I mean, the FAA would not allow that sort of thing, and it hasn't happened. But I think, unfortunately, that didn't get cleared up, and so the legislation was launched and off and running.
Did you have a conversation while you were in the legislature with Bob Russo and others?
We did talk, and we had meetings of the delegation, Mecklenburg delegation, to talk about it. One of the things that's really very been very helpful to Mecklenburg County, to Charlotte over the years, has been the legislative delegation meets on a regular basis, Democrats and Republicans, and we try to talk through the matters that are of issue of interest to the city and the county before they go onto the floor. That is not the common practice in other large urban delegations in the state.
Mm. Ron Carley, since the city doesn't take any money from the airport is a self-sustaining entity, what would the impact of our losing control of the airport be, in your opinion?
Right. Well, of course, the transit agency and the utility agency are also self-sustaining enterprises as well, but together they form the total local government entity, with the airport being the single most important economic driver in this community.
Meaning that it – what does that mean?
Well, first of all, as a source of jobs itself and what it generates, but if you talk with our business community, they will identify very clearly that the size of our airport and the number of flights and accessibility that Charlotte has to literally anywhere in the world through this airport is critical for the sustaining and growing of businesses within Charlotte. And so what we're able to do as a city department is provide a level of support and specializations, particularly on the administrative side for the airport, which if it were not integrated in the city, would all have to be done independently in a much smaller organization. And we think at a fairly significant with fairly significant inefficiencies. There's also the question of what kind of governance do you then really have. The governance structure at the airport in Charlotte has worked. I mean, if proof is in the success, the success is there and the success has been driven, I think, by the structure at which it operates, particularly where the aviation director, by reporting to a city manager and as opposed to reporting to politicians or appointees by politicians, really has been buffered from undue influence, and over the years has really been able to focus on the business of the airport and grow the airport. That's what happened traditionally, and that's very much what is happening today under current leadership.
The other controversy surrounding the airport deals with taxi cabs. We did a 20-minute piece on this radio station last week on the complaints of some taxi companies about being shut out, and that was also part of this pay-to-play thing with Patrick Cannon. City Council has asked you to review, Ron Carley, the taxi contract with the airport. Where does that review stand?
We will be doing shortly a full briefing of the City Council of the contracts, the process that we went through, how the selection was made. A number of the current council members were not involved in the process. What took place several years ago happened before I got to Charlotte as well. So we want to get everybody to a common level of understanding of why there is a competitive process to select specific taxicab vendors, contractors for the airport, and how that was done in order to make a judgment of how we go forward. The current contract only has two more years of possible renewals available to it. We'll be making a decision over the next 30 days in terms of whether or not to do any extensions of the current contract.
Could this controversy and could any evidence that Patrick Cannon did, in fact, act unfairly in this case be used as ammunition by people in the legislature who want to remove the airport from city control?
Well, the taxicab selection process was really driven by the professional staff within the aviation department. And as I said earlier, that staff actually does have a layer of protection between them and the elected body. The city council and the mayor actually don't have the authority to give directives to employees below the city manager. And so I think the current structure provides more protection than certainly having an aviation director report to 13 political appointees. I don't think that will improve the situation at all.
Before we run out of time, let's talk about some good news. Yesterday, when we had Dina DiIorio on from the county, she reported about having a surplus. The county has a surplus. Last night, I believe, when you presented your budget proposal to City Council, you too are reporting a surplus. Is that true?
Well, I would report it as strong economic growth. But our overall general fund revenues are up 3.6%. That's basically running with what the cost of doing business is. So I would not describe that actually as a surplus per se.
But you're doing better than you thought you might, given the uncertainties over property revaluation.
Yeah, the revaluation did not adversely impact us as much as we feared originally.
Why is that?
The original projections, I think, were probably overly conservative. But as the reevaluation has gone forward, more and more information has been collected, and it's less projection than speculation than really based on data. But our property tax is only up 1.5%. So property taxes themselves are not at this point keeping up with cost of government. And that's something that we have to look to for the long term, which is why the community investment plan is really important for growing our economy.
The growth in revenue this year is really as strong in the sales tax, and that's a sign of good, strong economic activity in the community.
Why is the cost of government outpacing revenue collection?
Well, it's the growth of the city. The city has grown tremendously over this past decade and unfortunately got punched in the stomach with the recession. And so it's been very hard to actually keep up with demand and just the sheer size of our city given the challenges going through the recession. And now we're basically in a catch-up mode in a number of different areas trying to adjust to what has been really unbelievable growth.
I remember talking about this prior to the recession where it was really out of control. I guess did the recession give you some breathing space or did the growth continue when the money stopped?
Well, people kept coming to Charlotte. And so growth has continued. The actual economic activity around building new buildings, both commercial and residential, was put on hold, and that then slowed the growth of our property tax base. What we're seeing now is a more robust economy. I think we'll be seeing a lot of cranes around Charlotte, and that will provide us an opportunity to recalibrate and make sure that we can fully deliver on the services that we're committed to delivering.
So you alluded to the community investment plan. What is that?
The community investment plan is capital investment throughout the city of Charlotte that the city council adopted last year. Most of the resources are actually going to non-transit-related transportation projects, roads, sidewalks, trails. It's an $800 million-plus plan. The real key to it will be a bond referendum this fall, $145 million. A proposal is in the recommended budget, and now it's up to the mayor and council to scrub that and determine what they really will put on the ballot for the voters to consider this fall.
Another issue out of Raleigh with money attached to it is the General Assembly working on a proposal to revamp the business privilege license tax, which brings about $17 million a year to the city of Charlotte. Legislators have talked about scrapping the tax. Now some legislators are working on expanding the tax to more businesses, including doctors and banks and lawyers. I think you've called this tax archaic and complex, Dan Clawfelter. So most people are not familiar with this tax. Why would they want to scrap it?
Mike, just to illustrate, one of the things about the tax is in order to find out what tax a city can impose and what tax the taxpayer must pay, you must be able to get access to statutes that were repealed many years ago. Laws that are no longer laws tell you what the tax is today. That is just absolutely ridiculous. The structure of the tax is so complicated and archaic. Taxpayers who are in exactly the same kinds of businesses pay very, very different taxes. It distorts competition among them. It needs to be replaced. And I've been consistent about that since I've taken my new job, just as I was before.
So
the main point is it has to be replaced with something that's more stable. And we can't just kick a hole in municipal budgets by repealing the tax and doing nothing.
And how likely is the legislature to understand that?
Well, I think they do understand it. I think what they're working very hard to do is to find the right substitute for the tax. The proposals that we've seen more recently move in the right direction. They don't quite provide a full substitute for the tax, but I think they understand they can't just repeal it and do nothing.
Does your departure from Raleigh and your arrival here as mayor give us more or less clout with the legislature?
there's no immediate answer to that. Again, I intend to continue to build the relationships that I had and try to carry them forward and preserve them. I hope that will be a benefit to the city.
And Michael Barnes, I have 10 seconds, says that you promised not to run in 2015. Is that true, and will you run in 2015?
Look, I told them that if they want the commitment, they can have it. If we think things are going really well here in a year's time, we can sit down and talk about it again.
Dan Clawfelter, the new mayor of Charlotte. Ron Carley, Charlotte city manager. Thank you both for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation on